Hello and welcome to the sixth episode of the Jammy Podcast. For this episode, I'll be talking with two-thirds of the Wild Swimming Brothers, brothers Callum and Robbie Hudson. This was such a fun interview and I really hope you enjoy the episode. Thanks for listening and enjoy the interview. I'm here with Callum and Robbie Hudson, two of the Wild Swimming Brothers. Brothers Jack Callum and Robbie first did their proper swim together in 2015 when they swam the length of the River Eden. Since then, they have swam in the biggest maelstrom in the world, swam the length of Loch Broome and through the boundary of Europe and Asia. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, thank you very much.
So, first of all, well, obviously you grew up in the Peak District, but were you always into swimming from quite a young age?
Yeah, we were. It's something, I think we come from quite an outdoorsy family. Our dad is English and our mum is Scottish. Every time we were on holiday, you know, with our mum up in Scotland, we'd be up in the Highlands and with our grandma Wild, and we'd be basically what any time of the year, you know, we'd be in the water swimming in the winter, and it was just something that we just did. And I think it's always been a big part of our life as well. But yeah, what do you think, Callum?
Mum was telling me a story the other day that apparently when I was a toddler, so when I must have been like 2 or 3 years old, I had this really annoying habit that whenever we went for a dog walk, I would search out the deepest puddles I could find and just leap into them. So I think from an early age, there was a little seed there. But it's, I think it's different for kids. When you're younger, you know, when you're 5, 6, 7, 8, you go to the beach and you don't really think about it. You just go for a swim in the sea. You know, you're not thinking about having a swim cap on and goggles and how far you're going to go. It's just about getting in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so then when you started school, did you start doing swimming competitively, or was it still just something you do outside of school?
Not really. I mean, we all did quite a lot of swimming lessons. I can remember Mum taking us. So we were all swimming quite a lot, but we'd always been in the water, and I think like we were taught to swim quite young. But to be honest, no, we never really did it like competitively. No, we weren't doing racing or anything like that. I think it was more just for the love of it. And it was never just in a pool as well. Like it was, we'd been brought up to swim in the rivers and the lakes and the seas as well.
Yeah. So you've done all this wild swimming, but are you interested in doing pool swimming as well? Is that something that you do as well?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's because it also depends where you are. You know, sometimes it's at the end of the day, it's better to have a swim than not have a swim, you know, just because you don't live near a lake or live near the sea or something. When we were training for the especially for Norway, for the maelstrom swims, like I did quite a bit of pool swimming as well, because I was in Berlin at the time and they have really great Olympic pools and they're all outdoor, so I would swim in those because it was near, and also then go to the lakes and train in the lakes as well. So I didn't enjoy both.
Same for me. My 95% of my swims are in an outdoor lido, so I've got an outdoor lido and I'm in London. It's Brockwell Lido. It's about 5 minutes from my house. You know, so that's been a real lifeline for me during lockdown. Because, you know, it's not, you weren't really able to go for and search out a river or a lake or the ocean to go swimming if you live in a city. So I think that kept me sane during lockdown. But I guess wherever you're nearest, if it's an outdoor lido, if it's an indoor pool, if it's a lake or a river, the feeling of swimming is still the same.
Yep. So obviously swimming is the thing that brings all three of you together. But both of you have taken quite different career paths. How did you each come across this? How did you?
Well, my first thing that I would say to you is don't take any advice from us. We've taken a very unconventional route, I would say. It's so hard because when you're growing up, you do these things out of enjoyment. You know, I'm sure you and your friends will just go, and if you see somewhere that you could swim, you would just go for a swim. You wouldn't really be looking for a name for it, or you wouldn't necessarily feel it had to be a thing to do it. So I think for us, it was a very strange route into it. And we'd all, as you say, we went completely separate ways and we're all doing different jobs. But I think that's why one of the main reasons why it formed, because Jack was in Newcastle, Robbie was in Berlin, I was in London. I'd left university. I'd kind of found myself in London working in a corporate job because I hadn't thought carefully enough about what I wanted to do. So I'd kind of, that's my biggest advice, really have a careful think, because if you don't, you'll end up in a corporate job in London and then you'll have to become a wild swimming brother.
So do you think that all of your individual characters bring together to make these projects so good and so amazing?
I think that's actually one part that's really fun about it, is that, like you're talking about, you know, we have the swimming to tie it all together. But even, to be honest, in probably the like style that we swim, you can even see our personality. So because we're three brothers and we've grown up and we're all like, you know, quite sporty, and there's definitely that element of competition, that kind of like fun competition. And I think that's good because it basically means that none of us would ever be the first one to quit, no matter how bad it got. Be like, you could be literally freezing and just, you know, everything's terrible, but it'd be like, I am not going to stop before Jack or before Callum, so I'll just keep going. And so there's that. But then also you can see a little bit like when we swim together. So I would say like Callum's normally the one who'll like storm off at the front and like he'll go head first, like into the maelstrom, or you know, like and as the middle child, you know, like he's definitely probably got that like biggest sort of just completely fearless energy. And that's really good. And I think maybe me as the oldest, I'm more thinking like, oh, we need to look out for everybody, make sure every, like, balance it all, make sure all three of us manage to complete the whatever task we're taking on or whatever the challenge is. And I think Jack's more like kind of in his own world. He's like this really sort of like natural, very natural swimmer, but to be honest, out of the three of us, he probably does the least amount of sport, yet he's like the just really effortlessly will swim everywhere. And he's probably more in his own world, like enjoying the atmosphere. Just, you know, classic writer.
We're basically one third of an acceptable person, so only by coming together and forming a trio are we actually capable of doing anything.
So you were saying that, but how important is it for you that you do all these swims together and not just alone?
Massively. I can very strongly attest to this because I did a difficult swim last year on my own. So I got the opportunity to go and live and work in Singapore in Southeast Asia for a year. So I took that and went out there, but it meant that some of our Wild Swimming Brothers plans had to be put on hold a little bit and we couldn't really do a big expedition together. So I'd signed up for this 18-kilometre swim around a big island in Malaysia, and there's reef sharks and jellyfish and, you know, it's like incredibly hot. And I was on my own and I found it really difficult. It was just not quite the same sharing it. And all, because it's not just the highs, it's the lows as well. The painful moments, the silly moments, the moment when you're at your lowest or when you're exhausted, those are so much more powerful when you can share them and reflect on them with other people. It is so much more meaningful to go through it together. And
It straight away made me think of one moment with you and I, Callum, where we were... Callum organised to go and swim across the Corrie of Wrekin. It's a little bit of a training swim for when we swam the River Eden. So the River Eden's that's 90 miles. we did about 10 miles a day for 9 days. But as I say, a bit of a training swim, a little bit for warm up, we travelled up to Scotland, and the Corrie of Wrekin's the third biggest whirlpool in the world. And it has been swum across by other people. You can go and do it. And it's between Jura and Scarborough, between these two beautiful islands. And one of them is actually the island where George Orwell wrote 1984. And it's an incredible place. It's really, it's just an amazing place to visit, regardless of swimming. But when we went there, it was pretty crazy conditions. And we had Duncan, our ship captain. We could see him because he knows the currents and the eddies really well. And he would, you know, guide us out. And he's like, you know, we need to swim it at this time. You have this limited window to get through because of the currents. Make sure you get across in that time. And as we were getting there, you could see him, like, and he had a bit of a furrowed brow, and we were sort of looking at, and he was like, the conditions were really strong, really ginormous waves. And like, I remember looking at Callum, and it was kind of like, we both just had that moment when we were obviously very nervous, but like, we just were smiling and just had a good laugh, because it was like when you go into something completely ridiculous and crazy, but you're doing it together. So it's like, yeah, well, you know, why not? So let's get in and have a swim. I think that was good. I enjoy those. I enjoy those like mad little moments that you get. And another one actually that just springs to mind for me was in Norway as well, when we swam across the Moskstraumen. And that's the biggest maelstrom in the world. And we did it fairly early in the morning. And I just remember swimming. And when you're doing crawl, you're obviously you turn your head to breathe.
Yeah.
And I remember just looking up and seeing Callum and Jack quite close by, like also swimming, just seeing their arms come out of the water. But we're in the Arctic, and I could see like the sunrise and see all the water and like the light on the water. And I just for a moment there, I was like, actually, this is completely crazy but also incredible, you know, like when else would I be at breakfast time swimming across a whirlpool in the Arctic, and there's my brothers, you know. It's like those really nice moments are pretty special.
Yep. And so who had this idea to set up the Wild Swimming Brothers?
I'm gonna take credit for the name. I think Robbie did a really big lake swim in 2014, was it, Rob?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because it was the year before. So it was, that was part of an art project I did with an organization called VARC. That's Visual Arts in Rural Communities. And the idea for the project was that I would swim the length of Lake Ullswater, which is about 7.5 miles, and then use that line through the landscape as a new way to gain an original perspective, and then make artworks about the landscape. And so I made quite a lot of abstract paintings and drawings and prints and did a show. And then once that was complete, yeah, then really it was Callum's idea to do the River Eden. And I think it was at that point, because we started swimming together, Callum gave it a name, and then it began, really. That's pretty much how it started, I would say, Callum.
It's just been a pleasure to do, really, because it's such a fun activity to be part of. And it also throws you into these really nice worlds of it's outdoors. A lot of it's to do with wildlife that you might see or experience. There's a real nice community feeling to it. You know, a lot of the places you go, there's groups of swimmers, and, you know, some of the swims we've done in other countries, it's a really fascinating insight into other cultures. And I still think that everyone enjoys that feeling of jumping into the sea or jumping into a river, even if beforehand they might be really scared or is it going to be cold. I've never seen a single person come out of the water and say that they regret it. It's what would you say for your friends and other people your age? What's their perspective of swimming outdoors?
Well, my sister is a big swimmer, but obviously, especially during lockdown, I think they pools were shut, so a lot of them took to rivers and stuff, and my sister actually still continues swimming in the river. I think it's really refreshing, and recently there's been a lot of stuff saying how great wild swimming is for your mental and physical health, so yeah, it makes you feel good.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there. Yeah. It, it inherently just, I don't know whether a lot of it's to do with the cold water kind of forcing you to stop thinking about what you know, you jump into cold water, the only thing you're thinking about is how cold is that water. Yeah. So it really just resets everything. I think there's also something to do with the when you're heating back up afterwards. That I was reading a report the other day, I can't remember where it was from, but it was saying that it shocks your body into an immune response.
I think it's interesting, as you mentioned there as well, that there's quite a lot of documented benefits to it as well. And there's something that's been really interesting, I would say, from our perspective doing it. But, you know, just even going through some of the basic ones, it's like it does have quite a powerful physiological effect. Like it lowers your blood pressure, strengthens your immune system. It like releases endorphins and dopamine into your system. So like scientifically, that's the reason why you feel good after. And also it's, for me also, I find the mental health aspect of it really, really interesting, because there's also many older cases of it. And like a really good example is Charles Darwin, because he suffered quite badly from depression, and he used to get these blocks where he just couldn't work and he couldn't write. And he used to do it, like he used to have cold showers, cold baths, and do cold swimming. And he wrote about how that helped him overcome these like blocks and these problems with his mental health. So it's interesting to see that side of it too, I think.
Yeah. So obviously your first proper swim together was River Eden. You said about training for that. It took you 9 days to complete. How, you must have had quite a big support team with you to complete this challenge.
Well, we had actually, it's funny because it was, you would think so. But actually we did. We had some of our friends who came along and kayaked with us. And we also had like our mum was one of the best probably support members, because she would just show up unexpectedly at like various points along the river with loads of food and exactly what you want, you know, when you've been swimming for 6 hours in a freezing river, and then to just go around the corner and like see your mad mum dancing around and then be like, oh, eat this. And she also got in and would swim with us. Didn't she do like a 3 mile stretch at one point as well? And
she did. I think she brought us a 12 pack of donuts, forced us to eat all of the donuts, and then joined the final 3 mile swim.
Yeah, but it was probably like in your mind, you might imagine it being like really professional and everything, but it was honestly really, really low key. And, you know, we were camping quite a lot of the time in the evening. And as I say, we had some of our friends in kayaks with us. And honestly, like a lot of the time, it was just like the community of people on the river would come and give us stuff, and just be like, oh, we've been, you know, following the journey, have some cake or have some milk even, actually. That happened at one point as well. So, that was good. That was good. I think it's sort of at the end of it, we realised that for all these things, it's like you can, if you want to do it, just go and do it. You know, just like, as long as you make sure it's not going to be too dangerous and you know what you're be facing and everything. But you don't need a massive support team and tens of thousands of sponsors and loads of expensive kits. You know, if you've got the desire to do it, then I'd recommend just giving it a go, really.
Yeah, that's the nice thing about the adventure community is there's no committee waiting to tell you whether you've had a worthwhile adventure. Or the only person stopping you is yourself. You know, all you have to do is, obviously you've got to plan it and come up with it and then convince some of your foolish siblings or friends to go along for the ride. But it was a really liberating feeling that you can create these kind of expeditions. They're not, you know, we're not professionals. We've never had any training on, you know, how to plan an expedition or anything. You know, that's the beauty of YouTube or the internet, social media, is you can reach out to anyone wherever they are in the world and you can ask for them advice. And I think that's pretty much what we've done the whole way, is kind of just go and ask someone who's an expert for advice and help. And pretty much every single time you just humbly ask for someone's opinion on a topic that they're an expert in, they'll usually give you some pretty sound advice and try and help you out.
Yeah. So the second swim you did was a bit more dangerous, the maelstroms. When you swam in the biggest maelstrom in the world, Moskstraumen, I think I'm saying that right.
Yeah, that's right.
And another incredibly large one, Saltstraumen in Norway. For listeners who don't know what a maelstrom is, it's a really powerful whirlpool. So, Callum, you had the idea to swim these, but how did you come up with this vision?
It was because we'd done the Corrie Vreckan. So when we were looking for a kind of training swim for the Eden and something that would be fun, we found the Corrie Vreckan because it
Yeah.
wasn't too far from where we were. It's off the coast of Scotland, which we love and which we know quite well. And everything about the Corrie Vreckan was saying how it was the third biggest. It's the third biggest in the world. So I knew, hang on a minute, what's number one and two? There are more. I'd never heard of, like I'm sure a lot of people listening wouldn't have heard of a maelstrom. So I didn't even know that they existed or what they were. And I started researching where the other ones were. And there's only about seven or eight of them in the world. The others were in countries very far away, Japan, New Zealand, the US. And there was two, which just so happened to be about 30 miles apart in Norway. And I thought, well, we're quite like our cold water. There's no sharks in Norway, which was important for me. There's killer whales and big jellyfish, but no sharks. So that was a big plus. And then I think your imagination just, if you'd have asked us before the Eden, could we have done those swims in the Arctic? We might have said no, but it's just because I think we had that momentum, and because we'd done something big that we hadn't previously thought we would have been able to do. I think we were, buoyed up by confidence, and I knew that Robbie and Jack couldn't really say no.
Yeah. So it says early on in the book that Jack wrote, Swim Wild, which I'm currently reading. It's great. I'm really enjoying it. That there was no time to stop. It was like a sprint because you only had 12 minutes. What was the appeal to you for doing this sprint if there was so much pressure to get there on time?
I think it was the. I mean, it's obviously a good challenge, but it's also it's like an incredible opportunity to be able to try it. Even to be able to be there and be able to be working with. We work with a guy called Knut, who he organises the like the expeditions, and you can sign up and go and go on this big boat and see the Saltstraumen. And he helped us because at first when Callum had the idea, we didn't know if it was even possible, and we wanted to try it, but nobody else had ever tried it before. And yeah, he helped us out, and we're speaking with him, and I think it was the partly the challenge, but partly also to just do something completely new. Also the maybe personal test, to challenge yourself. And I think that's a pretty good thing to try. It's because if you with all your goals and your challenges and your ideas, if at the beginning you feel quite scared of it, then it's definitely a good challenge, because if you think, oh well, this is my goal, but you can easily achieve it, then it's not really that much of a challenge. So I think those things. So for me personally, I really love the idea of it being that a personal challenge, also like a test of your physical and mental capacities, and also the environment's incredible. It's such a beautiful place that it was really special to be there and to swim there from my side.
Saying that, being the first to do something is much more important than, the bragging rights. It allows you to experience something that no one else has, and there's a really special feeling to that because it's new. That body of water over there that you're looking at hasn't been swam across, and no one knows what it feels like to be in the middle of it, or what that might feel like, or what you might see. So in the same way, if we went hiking and we climbed a mountain that no one had ever been on, it would be a really special feeling to be the first people there. And I think it's it ties you a little bit closer to the natural world, because it's something that's without humans. Humans don't go here. Humans don't do this. They haven't done this before. So there's a really nice connection to where you are. And yeah, I think it's just as an experience, you know, doing something really, really worthwhile, enjoying ourselves and getting to do it together. As Robbie says, it was a real privilege. So you kind of feel you have to enjoy it, because who knows when you're going to be back? Probably never.
Yeah. And as you said, because no one else had swam through it, there was a large element of risk, I guess, because nobody knew what it was like to swim through it.
Mum was not very happy about it. She won't mind me saying it was the one swim where she really tried to stop us from doing it. All of the other ones, she's very much encouraged. But that one, I don't think she was best pleased about. Do you remember seeing it, Robbie, the first time we saw it in the boat?
It was pretty crazy. It was because we saw it in full flow. And if you ever, you can find a really good, we have some videos on the website, or you can actually just find them on YouTube. And you, when you look at it, and then I remember when we were thinking about it, and I just watched a video, I was thinking, oh, we're going to swim across that. Right. Okay. It's a serious thing. And I think also it's something like all three of us are pretty relaxed people and quite chilled. But when it's come to these swims, like, we've never been arrogant towards nature. Like, you know, I think all three of us have like quite a good respect for nature. And when you go and do things like this, it's great because it just reminds you of that. That was the case exactly with the Salt Strabane, like you touched on. You said that we just had this small window, and we just trusted the knowledge of Knut, who knew the tides, knew how the waters worked. Like, he helped us plan a route through what he thought. But all the times we were like respecting how it is there. And it was interesting when we did the Corrie Vrekken, because Duncan, the ship captain's there, he was saying to us, when you're swimming across, the water will pull you in different directions. And what you need to do is not panic, but just let it pull you. And as long as you are roughly going in the right direction, that's great. And don't like try and fight against the current. And that's really, it feels really counterintuitive, because when you think like, oh, I'm going to do something, I need to power through it, I'll fight through it, but you also have to relax into it as well, and especially when you feel yourself being pulled and moved around by the power of one of the world's largest whirlpools. It's a fairly humbling experience, I would say.
Yeah. So do you always try and do bigger and better than like what you did before, bigger, more risky stuff?
Not necessarily, because actually the year after the Moss Strauman and the Salt Strauman in the Arctic Circle, we went back to Scotland and did the Loch Broom swim in memory of our Grandma Wild. So that, you know, it's a long swim, and it's a very cold swim. So it was challenging from an endurance and stamina perspective, but there wasn't the same, there was no orcas, there's no really strong currents or whirlpools or anything like that, and that maybe, you know, that really had a very strong personal connection to it, and that place means a lot to all three of us and to our families. So I think it's not necessarily about always doing something that's bigger, because you're the only judge of whether it's better, really. You know, how much did we enjoy it? And if you're just constantly trying to, you know, if we were like, well, let's do the maelstroms, but in winter, or let's do them backwards or backstroke, you know, you can get to that point where it gets silly, and you have to have a really strong reason for doing that. You know, you might see there's other swimmers who do huge swims, and a lot of it has a very strong message, or there's something that they're trying to, a story that they're trying to tell. A lot of ours are, we really like having a personal connection and a reason for doing the swim. So as long as we're enjoying it and other people want to come along and share the experience, or if someone sees something we've done and you know, they decide to take their kid or take one of their parents for their first outdoor swim, then I would say that's we're doing a good job and it's a success.
I think also just to add a little tiny bit more context, like you talking about the swim we did in Loch Broom, that's like up in the Scottish Highlands, and that was Callum said then that we did it basically in memory of our grandma, so of our grandma Wild, who's our Scottish, who was our Scottish grandma, and she passed away a few years ago, and the idea of the swim was to, because her house was on the side, on the mountainside of the loch. And it's about 8 miles, the swim. So as Callum said, it's quite long, it's quite cold. But the swim was really meaningful because we swam past her house, and that's somewhere that we've been going ever since we were born, really. You know, it's beautiful, it's up in the Scottish Highlands, and she's buried in a church at the head of the loch. So we swam from Ullapool to the head of the loch, and we had other people from our family there, some people kayaking, some people swimming, and we took a wreath and then laid it on her grave in the churchyard at the end of the swim. And it became something really powerful because it was also, you know, it's quite a nice way to honour someone who's not here anymore by doing something that they would enjoy. We were joking about it at the time that, because Grandma was a pretty tough woman, you know, she'd be out swimming no wetsuit in winter time in Scotland. And we were laughing that, because we wore wetsuits for that swim, and we were laughing that if she'd still been there, she would have probably beaten us to the end and not wearing a wetsuit anyway, even though she was, you know, like a...
She was tough. How old are you?
I am 13, going on.
So she could beat us in an arm wrestle when we were your age.
Wow.
Yeah, it took... I think I was 15 the first time I beat her. I'm not even embarrassed to admit that on like a podcast going out to hundreds of people, you know.
You can't take that bit out, Gemma. You can't put that in.
I'll take that out. No. So yeah, obviously it was a really personal swim for you, but what effect did your grandma have on? Did she get you into swimming? Is that how it all sort of started?
Yeah, it's been something that, like, with our Grandma Wild and our mum, like really outdoorsy people, they've just brought all three of us up with that kind of love for the outdoors and to just be involved and engaged in the natural world and to respect it. And I think that's quite good because they never made it something that you should, if it's cold, like you should be scared, you know, it's just like you should embrace it still, but still have respect. And I think also we grew up with a lot of these kind of stories. Like for example, also our English grandma, like she also did a lot of traveling and she actually, when she was in middle age, she got divorced and remarried. And what she did was she took everything she had, all her money, and bought a boat with the new guy she got married to. She didn't really have any sailing experience, and the first trip they did was they sailed from Portsmouth to Palestine, and then they sailed through the Mediterranean. They had a little sailing school, and then at one she got a bit more experience. They sailed to America across the Atlantic, just the two of them. I always remember because she would just. She was also really modest, but the same thing, like very tough and very mentally tough as well. And I think that rubbed off on all of us because, you know, I remember being a teenager and seeing my English grandma called Grandma Martin, just talking to her one Christmas. And I think I was moaning about my GCSEs or something like that, you know, just some completely inconsequential thing. And she was like, oh, Robert, I remember one time when I was sailing across the Atlantic Ocean, Reg was sick for 3 days in a row, so I had to steer with no sleep for 3 days in a row across like these gigantic waves through the Atlantic. And when your grandma tells you that story, you start feeling a bit weak about your like problems at school and things like that. So it was really good, I think, because we've definitely been brought up in that way to not moan, not whine, not complain, just, you know, get on with things. And I think definitely that kind of love for the outdoors probably comes from these people in our family.
I think they led us discover it for ourselves as well, which I think is really, really important because I'm sure you have it at school when someone like really tries to force a subject on you or a sport yeah. or a hobby, that actually it can have the complete opposite effect. And it's very counterintuitive when, so we were quite lucky that we had these very kind of passive influences. Like mum would just come in from the garden and she'd have been outside for like 4 hours. She'd come inside, her hair would be all like stuck in the air with bits of twigging. And she'd be like, Callum, I found an interesting turnip. And there'd be like a turnip that was shaped in a strange way. And that was, she'd put that on the side and then she'd be off. So it was never too forceful. It was never too overbearing. It was never, I love this, so you have to love it. It was, I think they trusted us to go off and discover it ourselves. And that's when it really hits home, is when you discover it yourself. You know, if someone forced you to do an outdoor swim and dragged you along and spent half an hour in the car lecturing you about it, it was not going to be enjoyable. But if you yourself maybe listened to this and then thought, oh, well, you know, I'll try this, I'll go for a swim in the river, it's that moment you discover it on your own, which I think is really important.
When swimming in these really tough conditions and really long, how much of it do you think is the mental side of it and about you think like mentally saying I can do this or and the physical side, what's the balance, would you say?
I would say the massive percentage is mental. I think there's with like for example, if you were to swim in a lake and you wanted to, maybe it was your first time and you wanted to try and, you know, you do 100 yards or 50 yards or something like that. Like at first that will seem quite far. But if you build it up gradually over time, your own perception of the distance changes and it becomes much easier. But I think obviously you need a certain level of fitness to continue swimming. But honestly, like that's not as ridiculously high as you would think. And I think most of it really does come down to the mental side, because I did a really interesting interview with a guy, an American guy called Josh Bridges, who's actually he's a pro CrossFit athlete, and he used to be a Navy SEAL. So he's obviously really into swimming, and he told me something really interesting. And he says that when he's doing difficult physical challenges like running or swimming or anything like this, that he reckons it's up to 80% mental, and they have a psychological trick in the Navy SEALs that they use, which is called the 60% rule. And it basically means it can be applied to like anything physical that you do. But, you know, if you've been running or swimming and you feel absolutely exhausted, like, you know, as if you can't go any further, basically that just means you're 60% done. Like you can always go further than your mind. If you kind of program your mind in that way and just continue. And I think it's quite a liberating feeling, that as well, because you realize you're capable of more than you think you can do as well.
And it's a really good point, because our biological bodies haven't changed much for thousands and thousands of years. You know, we're still pretty much the same shape, the same size. So our physical frame was a hunter-gatherer frame. You know, we would have been out walking, hunting, trekking through the wilds, living outdoors. We're still in the same body. It's our minds that have expanded, and it's our knowledge that's expanded. So I think almost the human body is yearning for, you know, finally he's got up off the sofa and he's got off his emails. You know, he's not watching TV. You know, the human body is capable of so much, and you'll see it with people. You know, we're able-bodied. You see people with, you know, in the adventure world with disabilities, or I watched a documentary about the first ever blind man to climb Mount Everest. He's called Eric Meyerhofer, and he's fully blind, and he climbed Everest. So it's something that would be seemingly inconceivable. His physical body, but his mind is what dragged him to the top. And I think on our, you know, much smaller challenges compared to that, it still is the psychological side. And that's also really liberating, to know you can train your mind to go faster or go further or cope with more. And I think it also has a lot of benefits in your own personal life. You know, a lot of these adventures, you're testing yourself, you're scared. You know, we were all incredibly scared before the majority of these expeditions, especially the ones in Norway. I remember being terrified the night before and almost unable to sleep and scared of killer whales or big jellyfish, or I did Alcatraz and there's great white sharks there and I was terrified. But you know, you get over that and you do it and you realize that fear was there for a reason, to make you take it seriously. But it has huge benefits.
Yeah, and I also think that if you just think of someone who's done something more than you, it's like if I think you guys swam in a massive maelstrom, then if you did that, I can definitely just go for a half an hour run. And then it's, if they did that, I can. And yeah, it's a lot about.
Just add one little thing, like when I did swam Lake Ullswater, so as I said, that was about 7.5 miles. And before I tried that, the furthest I'd ever swum was maybe 1 mile in a swimming pool. And I remember the first training swim when I realised, I am going to try and swim Lake Ullswater. My first training swim was honestly no longer than 20 seconds. I got in the water. I was like, this is freezing. I swam around a little bit and then got out. I was like, that was so cold. How am I going to do 7.5 miles? And it was literally just slowly, incrementally increasing the distance and just getting more and more used to something. It's quite easy to have that mentality, like your mental state builds up with your physical state. The two help form and constitute one another. And I remember getting in, just, you know, even with my ankles in the water, about to start the swim of Lake Ullswater. And it was good. I had like Callum and Jack in the kayaks and another of our friend Luke, who was a support kayaker, but he just went fishing for the entire thing instead. I remember standing in the water and I just decided in my head, it was like, I'm either going to get to the end or somebody's going to pull me out. Like those are the only two options. Either I literally sink and they have to pull me out, or I'm going to be getting out the other end. And it's quite nice when you take total accountability for yourself and your own actions and just decide and try something like 100%. I think it's quite nice to do that.
And there's probably a much higher chance of you achieving the challenge if you're thinking, I can do this, then of course I'm not going to do this, I can't.
Yeah, you're totally right.
Yeah. So in 2018, you swam through the border of Europe to Asia. You swam through one of the busiest shipping lanes in the world. How did you make sure that you weren't hit by one of these massive boats?
They've also got big submarines there as well, because the Russians have a huge submarine port in the Black Sea, and that's the way through this tiny straits. There's only one day of the year that you can do the swim, and it's on I can't remember what date it was. It was in August, but there's only one day of the year you can do it. There's about, I think there was about 500 other Turkish swimmers. So there was other swimmers with us. And what they do is they close the shipping lane. I think you have a 2-hour window, or maybe 2.5 hours. They actually shut the shipping lane down. So in your head, you're like, okay, great. But if you get injured or get some cramp or something, that you don't want to be in the world's busiest shipping lane treading water. You've got this very narrow window. But do you know, it was really special, because it was amazing to see another culture of swimmers. It wasn't about us, you know, we were very much guests there.
Yeah.
And it's hugely symbolic for the Turks who swim there, because the Dardanelles is an area that strait between Europe and Asia, where lots of wars have been fought over it. It's where Troy is. So all of the Trojan Wars were fought in that region, Gallipoli. So there's lots of history. It's a very emotional swim for a lot of the Turkish people. So we just felt swept up in this feeling. And I've just got these images of like, there's a, what was the joke? There's a Turkish joke about men having a a balcony for a beer belly. Or
something. Yeah, it was a man without a belly is like an apartment without a balcony.
And they were there, the bellies were out in force. So you'd see, and every single Turkish swimmer had speedos or budgie smugglers, you know, the very tight, and they were all red and big, big barrel chested bellies, you know, no swim caps, very, you know, some without even goggles. So a very different style of swimming, like almost kind of old fashioned, kind of heroic way. And yeah, that was, it was really, really special. And just felt incredibly lucky. And also that swimming between continents, there's just something about that. That's, you can't really replicate that feeling. If it really feels like a journey when you can say, oh, well, should we settle from Europe and next stop Africa?
Yeah. Yeah. So another really busy shipping channel is the English Channel, which you haven't swam yet. Is this something you would quite like to do in the future?
Well, good question.
That is a good question. I think that's got to be something we have a crack at in our lifetime, Callum.
Definitely. Yeah, 100%. It's on the list. I've got this blue booklet, which is kind of like a notepad, a scrapbook with lots of the pictures and clippings when we got in the local newspaper, that kind of thing. And there's a big pull-out map in the back of it. And over the years, I've been, you know, writing down little places and little swims. And yeah, the English Channel is incredibly hard. It's a really long swim. Most people are in the water for about 12, 13 hours. It's quite cold. So it's definitely something that I would love to do, the three of us. I don't know if brothers have swam it before. I'm sure they have. Could be the first, but there was a lady who quite recently, I'm not sure when it was, she did a four-way crossing.
Ooh, wow.
Four ways.
I mean, you've got to be crazy to do that, surely. That is insane.
Who swims the English Channel three ways and then thinks, that wasn't enough? Yeah, she's incredible. She's called Chloe McArdle, four-way. And actually, outdoor swimming is a really interesting sport or activity in that at the top end, at the very, very top end of marathon swimming, all of the historically the greatest swimmers, most of them have been women. Lynn Cox was arguably the pioneer of outdoor swimming expeditions. And some of the swims she's done, even to this day, I don't think anyone else will ever do them. Yeah. She did one in the Bering Strait, so between Russia and the US in the 1980s during the Cold War. And it was 3 degrees and she did 2.4 miles. And 1 mile at that temperature is classed as an ice mile, which is arguably the hardest challenge in swimming. People say it's harder than the English Channel, and she did 2.4 ice miles.
That's insane. People must just have such good mental, like, I will do this, and a challenge. So Callum, a couple of weeks ago, you went to Fingal's Cove in Scotland, which is the Horcrux Cove in Harry Potter. It's an amazing place. I looked it up online and wow, what was it like swimming in such an amazing location?
I was so excited. I'm a bit of a Harry Potter fan, so I was very pleased. I grew up at the same age as Harry Potter, so when the books came out, I was the same age as him and kind of pretended that me and Harry would have been friends, and I would have definitely been in Gryffindor, even though Robbie will say I was in Slytherin.
Definitely. The sorting hat would put Callum in Slytherin in a second. It would be like that scene when he puts Draco in, just doesn't even touch his head, just straight into Slytherin.
Yeah, it was. But the cave was phenomenal. It has these really strange sounds and really strange acoustics, and it's almost like a cathedral inside. It's absolutely colossal. And it's got these huge black, you know, obsidian black basalt columns. and it's really, really exciting once you're in there. There's a little bit of chop and a little bit of swell, and it was a fantastic experience. I took my mum up, so it was my mum's 60th birthday present to go swimming with Basking Shark. So this was, you know, again, with lockdown, we've all kind of been forced to stay put where we are and explore our local area a little bit more. So I was looking for a real special treat for mum, and yeah, we got dropped in the middle of the plankton soup, which is the Basking Shark's food, which is like this orange mass of plankton. And then basically you get dropped in the middle, and the shark does flybys in and passes you. And you're in the water, and you could see the fin, but you couldn't see the shark under the water. And we were with one that was 8 meters. Your biggest great whites get to about 6 meters. We were within 8 meters, so it was huge, but you couldn't see it. And you're under the water, you're like, is it there yet? Head up, there's the fin. Is it there yet? And then all you see coming out of the darkness is this huge mouth just gaping open wide.
Like a jaw. Enough... That sounds amazing. That's slightly scary. So quite a few of the probably all of them have been, the locations you've swum in have been really cold. How cold does it have to be for you to put on a wetsuit?
It's a very personal choice, because Callum mentioned before that you know, some people try ice miles, for example, and part of that is that you don't have a wetsuit. There are certain, sometimes there are certain races or certain like milestone swims that people do, and part of the regulations are to not wear a wetsuit. And also it can be, when you wear a wetsuit, you sometimes miss out a little bit of that rush from the cold water. And I'm not saying it's warm just because you have the wetsuit on, but it depends what you do. And for example, when we went to Norway and we did these swims in the Arctic, the main thing was to do the swim and experience the swim. And, you know, we were in the Arctic there, as obviously, and I think it was good that we wore the wetsuits there. We all decided together that yes, we want to wear them for this. Yeah. We wore wetsuits for the River Eden, but I think honestly, for anyone who's started, you don't need a wetsuit to start. Like, just go and try it and just feel what's best for you. And that's what's really good, I think, about this whole wild swimming community, is that it's a really non-judgmental, pretty free place, and you know, no one's going to judge you if you want to wear a wetsuit or if you don't want to wear one. It's a very subjective choice, I would say.
Yeah, and so it is, water can be really, really cold, especially wild swimming, but do you get to swim all year in the wild?
Yeah, you can, and what's quite interesting is that if you do it quite a bit, your body acclimatizes. So for example, if you've never done it before and you suddenly go in and jump in on Christmas Day, you'll know about it. You know, it obviously will feel very cold. But for example, if you go once or twice every week all year round, your body will get much more used to it. And I always say this when we speak to people who are maybe thinking about doing it or maybe trying, you know, to get into experiencing cold water and all the health benefits, that a really good introduction is just to, for a week at first, try switching when you have a shower, when you've sort of finished, you've had a wash, just switch the shower to as cold as it can go for like the last 30 seconds, and just try that for a week. And honestly, by the end of the week, you'll notice that like your body's already starting to get used to the cold and the temperature. Because the first time you try it, you know, it'll be freezing. But then by the 7th or the 10th or the 20th time you do it, it'll honestly just start feeling really normal. So that's quite a good way to have an introduction to it.
And there's another trick as well that you can do, is you don't use the word cold. So I did it. I would always say that it's going to burn. It's an icy, you can say icy, it doesn't have the same connotation. It's going to be an icy burn. So when I get in the water, I'm going to get an icy burn, and that's how it's going to feel. And I think that you can trick your mind a little bit, because getting cold, you can warm up. Once you've jumped in and started swimming, you kind of warm up. So it's just that initial shock. And yeah, I always also a hot flask of hot chocolate, cake, a sauna, a really dry. We have these dry robes, which are like a huge, you know.
Yeah, my sister is one of them.
Yeah, fantastic. So I think, you know, there's ways of making it nicer. But yeah, no, you can swim all year round. You can, even if you don't swim all year round. So lots of people, it's quite famous to go for a Christmas day or a New Year's Day swim. There's lots of people all over the UK will go for a swim on New Year's Day. But you know, anyone can do it. You just go in for 30 seconds, a minute. You know, one of the rules is that for beginners is to stay in for the same amount of time as the temperature. So if the water is 4 degrees, don't stay in for any more than 4 minutes. So it's a really good, a clever way of doing it.
Yes. So I'm asking all my guests on the podcast, who has inspired you throughout your lifetime?
From a famous person, so not someone I know, it would definitely be David Attenborough.
Yeah.
I think he, like everyone else, he's been a huge influence on me, and he kind of opened up my eyes to the natural world, the animal kingdom, and being inquisitive and being curious, and that there's a whole world out there to go and discover, and animals you've never heard of and places you've never heard of. And that's kind of the wonder of it all. And finding out about it and learning about it and experiencing it and sharing it with your friends and family, that's kind of really what it's all about. So David Attenborough was definitely a huge, huge influence for me growing up. Yeah.
Yeah. I think he's inspiring everyone. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I picked an obvious one there, but.
No, it's very.
I would say, bro, since Callum chose somebody famous, I would probably choose, if we're definitely within our family, I'd say both of our grandmas. I think they've both had quite a big effect on all three of us. And also for just like the kind of lessons that they didn't ram down our throats, but just passively sort of passed on to us, I think are really, really good. So yeah, I would choose those two people.
So finally, what challenges have you got up and planned? Have you got anything planned for the future?
So I just got back from a swim today, so I'm trying. It's been tough this year because, you know, normal training patterns, we can't really travel as much or at all. So it's been quite different. So, and I've just really, really been trying to enjoy my swimming and not focus too much on distance and, you know, speed or anything like that, and just be quite kind to myself and try and enjoy it. But I think, and me and Robbie were talking about this the other day, there's four more maelstroms. There's one in Japan, there's one in New Zealand, there's one in Canada, and there's one in the USA. And yeah, I think those are the ones that I really want to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, definitely. To completely echo what Callum said too, I would love to do that. That's a lifetime project, to swim all of those maelstroms. And then I think another quite personal one for me, which I wanted to also do with Callum and Jack, like all of us together, but after doing the swim for grandma, I would like to swim Lake Windermere in Cumbria, like near where we grew up, basically in memory of a good friend of mine from school who died by suicide a few years ago. And like, we played rugby together, did a lot of sport together and everything. And I would like to swim the lake in memory for him, and to not to be an event, but it would be open to anybody else, especially for like men who struggle with any kind of mental illnesses, to just come and then also, you know, walk along the side or kayak or swim bits of it or something like that. And yeah, that's something for me that I would really love to do as well.
Yeah, that sounds like a great idea. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Thanks so much to Callum and Robbie Hudson for agreeing to come on the podcast. That interview was just fascinating. The Jeremy podcast will be back in 2 weeks on Monday, the 2nd of November. Remember, you can follow us on Instagram at the Jeremy podcast. Well, thank you, and I'll see you next week. All music from this podcast was found on festlyinstudios.com. This was recorded during the COVID-19 2020 pandemic, so was recorded on Zoom.